A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. Got some good news to talk about. Donald Trump's executive order coming down on Friday, directing Attorney General Pam Bondi to examine all of the laws and regulations regarding our right to keep and bear arms, as well as all of the existing stances that the Department of Justice has taken when it comes to defending the existing statutes and prosecuting individual Americans for violating the gun-related statutes that are on the books. So originally, I got to tell you, I had planned on speaking with Benjamin Shore from the group Rise Against Hate about a study that was done showing huge disparities in terms of racial disparities, in terms of who's getting concealed carry permits in the state of New Jersey. This is a big story, and it was prompted, Rise Against Hate study was prompted by the work from Bearing Arms contributor John Petrolino, who first started looking at this. So you'll hear that conversation with Ben Shore tomorrow on Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I did want to bump that back just a day so we could talk about Trump's executive order with our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. We like to do Mondays with Mark anyway, but this, a big Monday with Mark, because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Take a look and a listen. Mark, it is good to see you, sir. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Great to be here with you today, Cam. Always a pleasure, brother, on a Monday.
And it is good to have some good news to talk about. In fact, some really good news. You know, for the past 4 years, every time we've been talking about executive order coming down, it's been bad news for gun owners, right? It's Joe Biden and the ATF trying to infringe on our right to keep and bear arms. Now we've got the first Second Amendment related executive order from President Trump in his second term, and it is pretty broad, right? Directing the Attorney General to look at all of the rules and regulations regarding firearms in federal statute and federal regulations, as well as directing the DOJ to examine its position in litigation, right? In these cases, in many cases, we're talking about criminal cases that are being brought. Will the administration defend all of the current federal gun laws, or will they reverse course from what we've seen over the Biden administration in the last 4 years? This is really exciting stuff, Mark.
This is the biggest news we've gotten in, you correct me if you think I'm wrong, but we've been on defense now for at least 16 of the last 20 years. We were on defense even during the first 4 years of Trump. So over the last 20 years, we've been on defense. We have to relearn how to play offense. I'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, this is the biggest news I can recall doing this, Cam, I think. Interesting. I don't know. I mean, you know, we've been broadcasting since Heller, and then we had McDonald, then Bruin. Bruin was huge. I'm going to put this one up a little bit higher because just what you said, the federal review of all these cases, for example, the Vanderstock case is a great example of this. I was talking with John Lott about this on my program last night. Vanderstock is likely history, right? What are the courts? What is Pam Bondi going to do? And I think another big story here relative to this EO, you know, you and I had been talking about some trepidation with Pam Bondi because of her prior vocal support for a couple provisions in that Parkland bill, number one being the red flag law in Florida and the 18 to 21 year olds. And that trepidation was, is she going to support those at a federal level while she's AG? I think this puts that to bed. My theory that Trump's mandate and agenda is far bigger than just her, and her personal mandate is on full display here. She works at the pleasure of the president, period. You really think Pam Bondi is going to buck the president and start going after red flags and start going after this? It's not going to happen in this lifetime. Now, Gottlieb last night made the comment. He said, gun owners can rest assured that Pam Bondi is at least 80 to 90% pro-gun. Well, if she's 80% pro-gun, the other 20% just went out the window because of this executive order. So you can pretty much look at her as doing the bidding of Trump. That will be tested when there's another tragedy, Cam, and sadly there will be one, and we will see, because the Democrats will bring hell to bear on the Republicans in Congress once that occurs. Hopefully it never happens, but reality is reality. It's likely to. So we'll see that test. But this is huge on a lot of different fronts, including the Bondi front. So anybody that was really concerned about Bondi, this kind of puts that to bed a little bit, I think. Rest a little bit easier.
All right. I am not quite as optimistic as you are. At least let me put it this way. I am as optimistic. I am not quite as confident as you are. I think this is going to be a test for Pam Bondi. And you know, the first test I think really is going to be, one of the first tests is going to be, you know, where does she stand on under 21 gun bans? Right. So, we know when she was attorney general in Florida, she supported and had to defend, you could argue, the Florida law that barred those from under 21 from purchasing a firearm in retail. So we just saw the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals rule that the federal ban on commercial handgun sales to under 21s is a violation of the Second Amendment. It is now up to Pam Bondi to decide whether or not to appeal that case, right? The ball is in the government's court at this point. That's going to be one of the first big tests, right? So as Attorney General of Florida, she backed these age-based restrictions. What will she do as the U.S. Attorney General? As you say, I think the mandate from Donald Trump is to quit defending these laws. But again, Mark, you know, we've got a lot of legal challenges going on, right? I mean, everything from Section 922 G3, the unlawful users of drugs, do they get the do they possess the right to keep and bear arms? That's a live issue in the courts. You're seeing challenges not only to the ATF's rules that were put in place over the past 4 years, but, you know, we just had this federal judge in Mississippi, Carlton Reeves, who's not a big fan of the Second Amendment jurisprudence that's come from the Supreme Court, but he's at least acknowledging it, and he is abiding by it. So he recently said in an as-applied challenge, this wasn't a facial challenge to the federal regulations on machine guns, but an as-applied challenge, he said that a individual who's convicted of illegally possessing a machine gun, that their Second Amendment rights were violated. That, too, is one of these cases, right, that Pam Bondi's now going to have to decide. Is the DOJ going to continue to defend this existing statute, or are we going to take a step back and say, hey, you know what? Actually, we have a problem with the statute as written, right? These are some of the things that Donald Trump has tasked Pam Bondi now with investigating. And so we're not just talking about, you know, bans on so-called assault weapons. We're not just talking about maybe even, you know, the Hearing Protection Act, right? There are a lot of live issues for the Attorney General to address here in the immediate future.
Yeah, you're right. And those are two great examples. The Mississippi judge did what he did in his ruling, and I know you've read it, but he did it begrudgingly.
Mm-hmm.
He did it begrudgingly because he followed Bruin. He followed the letter of the law. Now, Pam Bondi, as you point out, let's go to that Fifth Circuit. Well, it kind of encompasses it all. Bondi is obligated by state law, legislative law in the state of Florida as the AG to uphold those laws. That's her job as Attorney General. I get that. If we don't like those laws, we need to change those laws, vote people in who will change those laws to laws that we want or remove the laws we don't like. The same thing holds true here for her. The interesting part about this is the Trump administration, being as pro-gun as they are, is it working against us in that Fifth Circuit case? If this were the Biden administration, clearly Garland would have appealed this to the Supreme Court. He would have moved on that decision. What you just brought up with Bond. Now, you know, we would want a Supreme Court decision on there to get it across the country, not just in the Fifth Circuit. So those of you living in the Fifth Circuit, we're happy for you. But the rest of us are outliers now because we have a pro-gun administration that's no longer going to fight these things at the federal level. I would love to see a Supreme Court challenge to that. Is it going to happen under a Trump administration? I don't know. And then you go back to that question of Bondi. This is going to be a test for her. She could use the same excuse at the federal level as AG that she did in Florida. I am bound by law as the attorney general. Well, no, it's called discretion. She can choose not to do these things. And where I'm a little bit more optimistic than you, I think, is maybe a little bit more confident, is that when we looked at the executive order here, I'm going to tend to agree with Gottlieb on this and go that step further. That I don't think she's going to try to trump, pun, you know, play on words here, on Second Amendment issues, because she does serve at the pleasure of the president. And Trump has made it very clear what he wants to do in that executive action. So I'm gonna approach this as I don't think she's gonna challenge these at this point moving forward. Let the Fifth Circuit stand. Is she gonna appeal it? I doubt she will do that. What is she gonna do with Mississippi and machine guns? Look, Bruin is the law of the land, whether you like it or not. And whether she likes it or not, it doesn't matter. So tests for Pam Bondi, no question. And those are two great examples that you brought up. But I feel really good about it, Cam. I feel comfortable and confident. Let me leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's it. Like I said, I am optimistic. I hope that my confidence grows. I'm curious where Pam Bondi's going to come down on some of these. I don't want to say fringier issues, but you know, some of these cases at the margins, right? Again, we know where Merrick Garland would have done, as you say, with this machine gun case. I don't know where Pam Bondi's going to go, right? You could argue that we've got a lot of education to do with the American people before the American people are comfortable with, you know, repealing the NFA the courts throwing out the NFA or the Hughes Amendment, right? You talk about how the Democrats are going to react the next time that there's a mass shooting. Well, we know what the Democrats would do and say if the Hughes Amendment were struck down, all of a sudden we could purchase machine guns that were made after 1986, right? They would lose their ever-loving mind, Mark. Oh, my God. I'd love to see it. I would love to see it. I'm just not convinced that we are there yet. But I do think that this executive order is a great start. For all of the talk about, Donald Trump going to undo these restrictions on day one, that's not really the way it works, right? I mean, the rulemaking process works in reverse, too, right? So you want to undo these rules formally. There's a process to do that. Now, if Pam Bondi comes back and says, listen, we think these ATF rules violate the Second Amendment, so we're not going to enforce them while we are officially trying to remove them. They can make that decision too, right? So I think that this is a necessary first step. I think it is a big first step. And I expect and suspect that in the months ahead, we're going to have some news, a lot of news to cheer about, Mark, as the investigation and the outcome of this investigation available to the public to see.
And a couple things too, because I want to go to ATF on this as well, and FFLs. We all know what's been happening there. And of the 30 days that she has to look at all of these issues, right, including the FFLs and the ATF's, what do we want to call it, prolific rulemaking binge that they were on, right, during the Biden administration. But you know, Trump is showing signs, obviously, that he is ruling this roost with an iron fist. And I feel pretty comfortable saying that if Pam Bondi does something that we don't like, it's because she has permission to do it. I think Trump is very, very engaged here, particularly when it comes to Second Amendment issues, because this was a huge campaign promise that he ran on. I don't see her going rogue without permission from Donald Trump. And I don't see Donald Trump doing those things, you know, supporting red flag laws or whatever challenge. When we talk about the Fifth Circuit case, if she wants to pursue that. If she does do those things that we don't like, it's going to be with Trump's permission, I believe. So we're going to know because he's ruling this with an iron fist. All right. So switching gears now to the ATF, that remains to be seen. It's going to be fun. We have a lot of great news coming up. And when she doesn't do the things we don't want her to do, that's going to be great news to talk about as well. Right. Like when she does do great things we want her to do as well. So but the ATF, I'll tell you what I want to see with the ATF. I want to see the FFLs make whole with my tax dollars who have lost everything because of the rulemaking schemes and garbage coming out of the ATF over the last 4 years. That's what I want. I want your tax dollars, my tax dollars, and your tax dollars, viewers, to make these people who lost their businesses, their livelihoods, generations of family businesses that were being passed down because of the ATF shenanigans. I want to see those people made whole with my tax dollars. Is that going to happen? I don't know. I'll put that on my wish list. I would love to see some form of compensation given to these people who literally lost everything. And look, you know, like we were talking about on my show last night, Cam, it's going to be near impossible if these companies were put out of business 4 or 5 years ago. They've lost their bank loans. They've lost their inventories. They can't just start up again tomorrow. You know that as a business person yourself. Yeah. When you've got 5 years now, you're probably doing something else. But my gosh, you know, it would be nice to see. I can't hate the ATF enough. They're no friends of ours, ladies and gentlemen. Never have been.
Yeah, all that. All that money that's being saved from USAID, right? I guess some of that could be redirected towards those folks whose lives have been ruined by the ATF over the last few years. It's a good idea, Mark. I got to say, I like it. Got to get that in front of the Trump administration.
Yeah, I think it's probably already in front of the Trump administration. And, you know, another interesting part, too, is what are we going to do with the head of the ATF at this point?
Yeah.
You know, there's talk about I got an interesting text message. I'll read it to you and listeners. This came from Arizona State Representative Quan Nguyen, who is the the House Judiciary Chairman in the state of Arizona. And I want to remind listeners and viewers that Arizona, we always view as the number one most gun-friendly state in the country, don't we? Arizona has a Democrat governor who would sign any one of the 16 anti-gun bills that crossed his desk that are now dead on arrival. But they only have a two-seat majority in the House in Arizona, Republicans, and a three-seat in the Senate. It might be flipped. Either way, it's 2-3 on either side. That's not a big majority. One shift, and the Democrat governor in Arizona is rolling back years of effort on our part. But here's what he sent me in a tweet, because he was a guest on my show yesterday. And it was a text message about Bondi and ATF director being narrowed down to Brandon Herrera, Blake Masters, and an unidentified wild card. And he said, "Mark, good morning. Looking forward to the show tonight. Who is the unidentified wild card? Do you have any idea?" And I said, "That's a great question. I have it on good authority that Masters has an upper hand, but that's not a shoe-in. I don't know. What is this from?" And we were unable to find out where that publication came from. We couldn't nail that down. So I have no idea what's going to happen at ATF, because now there's talk saying on Bondi that she is apparently, if you believe these sources, pushing the Trump administration to bring someone with law enforcement experience into the ATF. So we have so much to cover and so much to talk about coming up over the next few years, Cam. It's not even funny.
Yeah, you're right. As far as that wild card goes, listen, I've got no inside information, but if Bondi is looking at somebody with law enforcement experience, I would say my choice for that, if that's what she wants, which would take Masters and Herrera out of the running, I mean, I'd say Pete Frisella, right? The former deputy ATF assistant director who was one of the whistleblowers in Fast and Furious. I don't know if he's been a guest on your show. He's been a guest on Cam and Company multiple occasions. A strong pro-2A guy, somebody who believes that the agency should not be at war with the firearms industry, but that the firearms industry should be the ally, in combating straw purchasing, gun trafficking, things of that nature. If you've got to have somebody with law enforcement experience in that position, I think you could do a lot worse than Pete Frisella. I think he'd be a good choice for that.
You know, there's also a lot of great sheriffs out there that would make the running. Okay, I can name a few that I've not had Pete on my show, by the way. You and I will talk about that, share some information after the program. But because I would like to have him on. But there's some great sheriffs out there that would do a wonderful job. Sheriff Kurt Hoffman, active sheriff, a current sitting sheriff in Sarasota. You want to bring law enforcement in? There's your pick. You want to bring a guy in like Sheriff Mark Danels down on the border in Cochise County, a good friend of mine? There's your pick, you know. So you could even go to a Wayne Ivey down in Florida. There's a lot of great guys out there that would do wonders at the ATF who are very, very pro-gun and very much on our side. So it can be done. But again, we don't know. And I think the operative word in that conversation with Quan that I had was wild card. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and to that end, you know, we've seen that Trump, I think, is very comfortable picking folks from Florida who he's known. If Bondi has a say in naming the ATF director, that would also, I think, give an edge up to somebody from, you know, Florida in law enforcement, one of the county sheriffs that you mentioned there. I don't know. I suspect we won't have long to wait before we learn who that nominee is going to be, maybe here in the next couple of weeks. But as you say, Mark, plenty of stuff to talk about over the next 4 years. And unlike the last four, I think we're going to have a lot of good news to talk about going forward. Obviously, the threat still exists at the state level. You talk about what's going on in Arizona. We can look at Colorado. We can look at New Mexico, Rhode Island, California, all the usual suspects. Right? They're still just hell-bent on infringing our Second Amendment rights. But we at least now have a backstop that we did not have over the last 4 years. And that, I think, is going to be all the difference.
No, let's not forget Alabama. Okay, Governor Ivey, just last week, now after quote-unquote Glock switches, which are already banned at the federal level, she's on record as a very pro-gun governor in Alabama. Alabama, I want to remind you viewers, is a state that has the highest per capita number of permits by population than any other state in the nation. Alabama is a very pro-gun place. It's right down the road from me, about 20 minutes, just 20 minutes west of me. Very pro-gun. What is Ivy doing? Who is she trying to appease when Bloomberg and Everytown are applauding her for her efforts to ban something in the state that's already banned at the federal level? Usually when it comes to a politician, they do crazy, whacked out stuff like this. You can follow the money trail. So we're going to keep an eye on it on Armed American Radio. But it is just more proof positive that we can't lay down and get complacent. If you live in a very gun-friendly state, Arizonans, if you live in a gun-friendly state, Alabamans, okay, they're still coming for you. They're gunning for you, and they've got tons of money behind them, Cam. Tons of money. We can't pause.
Absolutely. Nope. Stay awake, not woke, but awake. Mark Walters from Armed American Radio, my friend, it's always good to see you. Thanks so much for hanging out with us on this Monday, and look forward to doing this again very soon.
Thank you, Cam. I appreciate it.
And thanks to Mark for joining us on the program today. Looking forward to having him back again very, very soon. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story from the Albany Times Union in New York. Now, this is not necessarily a true recidivist report that we're talking about here, right? Not necessarily repeat offenders, but still, it is one of those, okay, what's going on here stories with the criminal justice system. Here's the headline: the punishment for making a school threat, counseling. Which I have to say, in some cases, may be the appropriate step to take. When a student has a threatened violence at school. But that's not always going to be the case, right? And as the Albany Times Union found, teenagers who make school threats almost always face no punitive consequences for actions that would be felonies if they were adults. They say, despite actions that can leave hundreds of children terrorized, juvenile offenders almost never go to juvenile detention, according to prosecutors and school administrators. They rarely face a judge, mainly, at least in Albany, Schenectady, and Saratoga counties, they are offered counseling, whereas an adult who would make that very same threat would go to prison. They note that an adult who called in a bomb threat against a daycare in Clifton Park, New York in 2023 was sentenced to 6 years in prison after being arrested on the same charge as many of the juveniles who made school threats, making a terroristic threat. In New York State, the maximum prison sentence for that charge is 7 years. After a spate, the Albany Times Union writes, of school shooting and bomb threats against the Shenandoah, Scotia, Glenville, Schenectady, and Bethlehem schools in September of last year, parents flooded social media and school board meetings, demanded that students be expelled and treated like adults in court and jailed. In Guilderland, New York, parents objected when a student returned to school about 6 months after being charged with making a threat of mass harm that included a specific list of people who he wanted to hurt. William Critcher, whose daughter attends the same school as the student, said at the time, "The bothersome part for me the most is, what about the mental health of those kids who were on that list?" He was among many who spoke at a school board meeting while school officials said they suspected student had a right to an education. Critcher asked, "What about the mental health of everybody else? One kid's more important than those 20, those 40, those 80 kids?" That same month, Times Union reports, according to school officials, a Shenandoah student sent threatening emails to school staff. A Scotia Glenville student made a threat of mass harm on TikTok. A Schenectady student sent a Snapchat message saying he was, quote, shooting the school tomorrow. And two different juveniles made threats against Bethlehem, one a bomb threat, the other a repeated message about shooting members of the school. And again, in all of those cases, counseling, not the criminal justice system involved here. Times Union says a 21-year Stony Brook University study of juveniles who made school threats on Long Island found that many of the students had no intention of acting on their threat. Instead, they were often suicidal, suffered from clinical depression or anxiety when they made the threat. Study said making a school threat may be a significant signal or clue indicating the presence of underlying psychiatric problems. And again, that's why I say in some cases, counseling may be the appropriate step, right? One of the things we've talked about with Ryan Petty before. One of the things that Florida did in the wake of Parkland, in addition to the gun control laws that they put on the books, they did a couple of things that I think were actually beneficial. One of them was expanded the use of behavioral threat analysis, right? So when a threat is made, it is not the automatic assumption that, okay, we're going to take this kid, we're going to arrest him, we're going to put him in cuffs, we're going to bring him to court, we're going to put him in prison. It really is, okay, was there a both the motive and the means to carry out this attack? Or was this, as you know, the study in Stony Brook said, a more of a cry for help, a plea for attention? Hey, look at me, because I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling troubled. I don't know what to do. So I'm down with the idea that not every one of these cases needs to be resolved by the criminal justice system. But I am also not convinced that none of these cases need to be resolved by the criminal justice system. Again, when you've got evidence of a specific threat targeting specific students, and maybe the means to carry out that attack, if I were a parent of one of those kids on the list, and the person who made that list showed up in school 2 weeks later, or 3 weeks later, or 3 months later, I would be livid, because I think that there should be consequences. And when you get repeated threats, when the same individual is making threats on multiple occasions, and again, I think the bar gets raised, right? Now, maybe they do need psychiatric help, but maybe the best place for them to get that psychiatric help is going to be in a secure juvenile facility, because we are concerned that that individual poses a danger to themselves or others. Now, New York State, they've got no problem locking up legal adult gun owners, right? If you carry in a gun-free zone or a sensitive place, that's a felony. If you possess a firearm in New York City without your required permission slip, that's a felony. If you make your own gun without getting permission from the state first, that's a felony. I can put you in a maximum security prison for 10 years. So why is there this disparity then between adults and juveniles? I mean, again, lawmakers in New York would say, well, it's because of these juveniles. Their brains aren't fully formed. It's not about punishment. It's about rehabilitation. I get all that. I get all of that. But when these cases aren't even in the criminal justice system, when these individuals who are making threats are simply referred to mental health counseling, so there's nobody keeping track of them other than a therapist. And if they quit going to therapy, then nobody's keeping track of them at all, except maybe their guardian. That's a problem. It's not one that I expect is going to be addressed by lawmakers in Albany, but it is a problem. Now, on to today's armed citizen story. From the Chicago suburbs, Hazelcrest, Illinois, where a homicide ruled self-defense, no charges filed by the Cook County State's Attorney. Don't have a ton of information here. This was February the 2nd. Police in Hazelcrest responded just before 10 p.m. for a report of shots fired with a gunshot victim. When they arrived, they found a 48-year-old man with gunshot wounds who was taken to a hospital, later passed away. Police said a person was taken into custody of the scene, and during the course of the investigation was learned that the shooting stemmed from a dispute. The state attorney's office, after review, did not approve charges because the shooting was in self-defense, according to police. Again, that's all the information we've got from the Chicago Tribune. Hopefully we'll get more details. But again, according to prosecutors there in Cook County, this particular shooting justified, and the shooter will not be facing any charges. Finally today, our good deed of the day. Some hunters in Louisiana hoping to save a fellow hunter's life after an accident on Lacassine Bayou. This is from KPLC TV, Channel 7 in Louisiana. And they report on really a scary incident that happened just about 2 weeks ago, January 24th. It was Friday morning. Tyler Broussard is out on Lacassine Bayou with his son and his son's friend. They're in a duck blind. It was about 7:30 in the morning. And they saw another hunter getting out of his blind to get into his boat. It was about 100 yards away. Tyler Broussard says, all of a sudden we heard a loud noise, and we looked over and we saw the boat make a sharp turn, like two circles. And he said, we heard help three times out loud. He said, the boys looked at me. I looked at them. I'm like, yep. Unhooked the boat, got out of the blind, went over there and saw a boater in the water screaming for help. He had cut his leg and he needed 911. Broussard, his son, and his son's friend, able to pull the hunter into the boat. They're about 5 miles away from the boat landing. And so they had to act fast. They were worried that this hunter was going to bleed out on the boat. His son, Jackson Mesh, said, I had a life jacket around his leg, but it wasn't tight. He said, so the only thing I could think of, the only thing that I was the only one that had a belt on. He said, so I wrapped it around his leg and tightened it. Mesh, 13 years old, by the way, making that tourniquet with his belt. He said, I, you know, just did that around and did that to the tightest one. And I just did it like that. And I held it while we were going to the boat dock. Meanwhile, his son, Bo, or his son's friend, Bo Hixon, calls 911. Broussard is going as fast as he can in his boat, trying to get back to the land. And they finally made it there. Had to wait another 13 minutes or so before first responders arrived. And this is a very rural area we're talking about. But Tyler Broussard says, I'm just glad we're able to save a life. He said, it is still touching to this day. I can still see the whole way the whole situation played out. It's very amazing. The hunter who was injured wanted to remain anonymous, but did tell KPLC that he is stable and, quote, very grateful for the boaters and the hunters who saved his life. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a stranger in need. Tyler Broussard, Jason Jackson Mesh, and Bo Hicks. We thank you, Bo Hixon, excuse me. We thank you all for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. Looking forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. We do have some winter weather in store, but fingers crossed and a knock on wood that the power stays on long enough for me to do a Cam and Company tomorrow, as well as a full complement of stories at BearingArms.com. If, for whatever reason, inclement weather gets in the way and the power goes out, I know that my colleague Tom Knighton and John Petrolino and others will be filling in. But, again, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the winter weather does not interfere with my ability to be here tomorrow. And today, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, keeping you up to date on all the latest segment of news and information. If you like what you see, I would also encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. You get all kinds of exclusive benefits, but you'll also get the warm, fuzzy feeling of supporting the independent pro segment of journalism we're doing. And thank you very much for that support. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.